This week's special guest, Michael Poole, has his own podcast, Words with Oz. The man trains hard. He's not into selling secret sauce. He's not into quick fixes. He's talking about standard structure, change thinking, and being accountable.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition. Today's podcast is brought to you by the new Clean Coffee TX100. It's coffee done smarter, supercharged with brain, mood, metabolism, performance, and gut-boosting ingredients. We've combined the incredibly smooth taste of Colombian single-origin coffee with MCTs, apple cider vinegar, and Blue Ness, the ultimate stress-relieving herb. It's keto and vegan-friendly, gluten-free, with no added sugars or artificial sweeteners. Enjoy hot or cold, and take your coffee to the next level.
This week, I'm really excited. We're at Body Science HQ, and I have Michael Oz Poole, Australian high-performance speaker, executive coach, CEO of Words with Oz, and believer in the power of words. How are you, mate?
Yeah, feeling really good, mate. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be in the studio.
You twist it with a lot of big wigs in the fitness industry. You train every day at 98 Gym.
I do. Yep, been there for just under 5 years now.
So, mate, let's not muck around. What do you think about the gym industry? Like, where's it at? Where's it going for you as an individual that loves training?
I think it's going in the right direction. Not that I'm an expert in this industry, but I obviously have spent a lot of time with some people that are, and I like the direction it's going because I think it's heading down that path of results based as opposed to how you look. It's more about what you can, how you can perform. So I'm enjoying it.
And talking about enjoying that, you're a big driver of goals are important. They give us direction, and I'm just going to quote this off your website but the key to achieving is in what you do and how you do it every single day.
Yeah, that's my philosophy. That's, you know, one of my beliefs. I'm sure I'm not the first to come up with it, but when I read it or when I saw it, whenever that was in the last 30 odd years, that's what resonated. It's the idea there being your habits matter. You know, that what you do on the daily matters. You can set I'm all about setting outrageous goals. One of my biggest speeches that I put on is called Dream Big, Dream Bold, to go for the thing that's beyond what you think you can. But the action, the actual thing that matters is what you do and how you do it every day. And that's what's great about 98, and that's what's great about the gym industry, is that majority of the people that are in them every day. You know, they're in there every morning or after work.
Yeah, it's an incredible industry. I mean, it's who gets up at 5 o'clock every morning to train? When you sit back from an outsider's point of view and look in, it must look weird to a lot of people. But it's all, as you come back, comes back to, like, goals are important, and it's not just.
I think it's funny to say that, you know, who gets up at 5 a.m., but those guys, you know, and girls, the PTs that train at that time of the day, and those that aren't PTs, I mean, I thrive off the fact that I get in before some of the trainers. You know, it's a little bit of a probably personal competition there, but... Yeah, to get up that early and dedicate the first 3, 4, 5 hours of your day and many hours of your life to making someone else better at that time takes a certain, you know, certain type of individual.
It does. It's an interesting place in the world to be when you can give to others. You know, and that's probably one of the things that, you know, from a PT's point of view, it's that act of giving. And, like, one of the things that I think is really exciting to an individual who gives, and I mean, you either give or you take.
There's two
types of people in the world. I've got a mate who wrote a book on stress Teflon, and one of the things he says, he talks about the act of giving is one of the simplest things to being a better person in life. I guess there's no more giving than doing a 98 session early in the morning. I've seen what Kev can give.
Well, it's one of those things as well, and I had this conversation with someone recently, that the idea of, you know, is there such thing as true altruism? Giving is living. To steal a quote from someone else, the more you give, the better life you are going to live. That's where you get your feeling, that's where you get your love, that's what, you know, what drives most of us with that idea of a heart and love, is to give more. So when you're doing it in an unselfish way, you are actually doing it in, you know, for yourself, to make yourself feel better. So those PTs that are getting up and are giving it that early and, you know, spending those hours of their life giving, they get it. They do also get a lot back. I'm sure if we sat down with them and said, you know, what are your goals? Well, who do you want to be? Where are we going in the future with what, you know, with whether you're a trainer or a coach or a speaker or a coach, where we're heading is they want to be able to give so that they can feel better, whilst at the same time making someone else's world a better place.
Speaking of giving, and you do a lot of motivational type talking. Is that the correct word to use, motivational?
That is the best umbrella. On a personal level, I'm not sure motivation is the word that I like to associate with, simply because motivation comes and goes, and I want to talk to people about consistent performance. But that's the umbrella of where, you know, where my industry is, yes.
And how does someone fall into that part of the industry? I mean, you were a lawyer by trade, is that correct?
I was, yeah. I've actually had a a few careers for someone who's only, you know, only just turned 33. I've had three main careers. And how do you fall into it? It's funny that that you asked that question, because if I looked back at who I was at 15, 16, when you're meant to be making these decisions, you know, when you were meant to have sat down with a guidance counselor and worked out what you were going to do with your life, I could probably have seen that I was going to become some kind of coach. And I could probably have seen that I was a good speaker. You know, I had that ability to be in front of people, get their attention, use my words in a crafty kind of way that inspires them to do something. But society pushes you to go another way. You know, your expectation of what you should be comes along and says, well, what are you going to do with yourself? So I left school and went and studied chemical engineering. Simply put, because that's what my sister did. And she was one of my biggest idols. So what are you going to do after school? I'll become an engineer. Got to uni, I'll do chem engineering. Studied that, did that for a little while, and then realized it wasn't for me. And then I got into real estate. Seems to be a bit of a fallback for a few people that go into real estate when you don't really know what you want to do. And I went and sold sand to the Arabs. I actually went to Dubai and sold real estate over there.
Wow, that would have been a hard gig.
It wasn't that hard, because at the time they wanted to buy everything. Okay. So I was there during a fairly large boom period for Dubai, and a lot of the locals just wanted to build, and a lot of Middle East and Eastern European people really just wanted to own and build in that area. So yes, it was hard at the beginning, and the culture differences were hard. But when you think about a marketplace, it was actually quite easy.
They had 80% of the cranes at one stage over there, in the worldwide cranes, didn't they?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, somewhere between 80 and 90. And if I remember back, I actually lived in a building called Burj Dubai Towers back then. So, you know, the world's tallest building was originally called Burj Dubai, but they couldn't afford to build it. So he borrowed money from the Sheikh of Abu Dhabi, which is the richest state in the UAE. And that's why it's now called Burj Khalifa, because that's that Sheikh's last name. I lived under that. And I remember looking out of our skyline. We were on about the 19th floor, and looking out from the balcony and looking at the skyline. And there was not more than 50 meters of space without a crane, you know, just looking across the desert. So yeah, there were a lot there at the time.
How was working over there as a non-local?
There were plenty of us, is okay. The answer. There were plenty of expats. Over there, there's about 95%. At the time, there were about 95% of the population were expats. That included your Indians and Pakistanis and other areas around there. So it wasn't all Westerners, but the community of Westerners was quite large. It wasn't as difficult as you would think. What the main difficulty was is dealing with some of the head of the family Arabs and getting into their cultural ways. They all spoke English. They were all educated in English institutions, so they could speak with you fine. It was actually getting to understand them on a cultural level that was the hardest part. You know, sitting down, realizing that if you've got an hour meeting with one of them, it's going to take 3 hours, and 2 hours, 45 minutes is going to be conversation and not about your business, you know, and then it's the last 15 minutes that you get the deal done. And the sooner I realized that, the sooner I adapted to that, the more success I had. I sold a lot of stuff off the plant, and I sold as much big stuff as I could. So yeah. I did a lot of full floor commercials in a commercial building, a couple of villas, that kind of thing. I sold a few apartments along the way, but mainly tried to aim at the big stuff with a big commission. So from real estate, I was there during the financial crisis, as is the way when money is tight. In different areas around the world, people start to not pay. And I had commissions not paid for a period of time. So okay. I felt ripped off. Yep. And I thought, what am I going to do next? You know what? That wasn't good enough. And it wasn't good enough in the way that, okay, people ripped me off, but that's fine. But it wasn't good enough in the way that there weren't the laws in that place at the time to back up the person who was missing out. So I came back and learned to become a lawyer. And that wasn't to pursue law. That was actually with a view to pursue politics and change the regulations that were governing that kind of thing.
Wow, that's a big ticket to take on.
Yep. And did study law. Not too far from here, actually. I studied at Bond, which is, we could probably see it from here if we really tried.
If we stand up, we can.
Yeah. Studied that and then went down the law path for a little while. So worked in some criminal law places and then moved into the commercial law for a little while. And then whilst I was studying law, I lost both my father and my sister in the same year.
Really?
And that was the start of what I do now, because I got a phone call one day to tell me that a tragedy had happened at home and that my dad had passed, and then he passed from suicide. And you have a moment where you think, life's too short. Why am I pursuing this half-hearted path? You know, why am I pursuing law just because society says you should be a lawyer? Sure, I had some backing reason, you know, the politics thing that I mentioned and so on. But by the time that happened, I was in a law firm working 17 hours a day. It took a moment to look around at the people that were working above me that I was going to become, whether that was a judge or partner at the firm or barrister, and just realized that's not who I wanted to be. So I stopped and I thought, what can I do? And I went back to that idea that I told you when I was 15, 16, you know, those small things that I kind of always knew you were going to do, but you took a long way to get to where I wanted to go. What do I really want to do? I really want people not to make the mistakes that I made, that my dad made, you know, in that he was a great teacher when he passed, but he always spoke about writing a book that he never wrote. He was a great football AFL, we're from Adelaide, so he was an AFL player. He was a great football player. He played for one of the SANFL teams down there, won the McCullum Medal, which was the best player in the under-19s at a certain year. year when he was still quite young. Got drafted or got asked to go play for Carlton in the VFL when he was 17, and his dad said, no, you can't go. And so there was a bit of that as well. Right. So he never actually pursued that path either. So there's all these things. And I felt that reflected in what I did. I was always relatively talented at things. You know, I'd had these paths that I'd chase and I got quite good at them, but there was something missing. And so that day or that moment in that year was definitely a point where you think, you've got to do what you love to do. And I want to inspire the world to do what they love to do.
Yeah, strong words. I like that.
So from there, I decided I wanted to start Words with Oz. Personal mission is to inspire the world to be more ambitious, because I believe that's where it all is. And then that evolves into Words with Oz. And Words with Oz is all about using words, using the presentation of them, whether that's the podcast, whether that's speaking, live coaching, and using those words to have people, A, realize who they want to be, and then B, give them some tools and activities and some implements and some tricks to be that person.
So how do you inspire the world every day?
It's a tough question. Mm. You know, how do you inspire the world every day? I think one of the main things for me is my mission is to do that. Mm-hmm. And so every morning, first of all, let me say no one's perfect. So no one is fully themselves every single day. But every morning I can, and at the moment that's somewhere between 5 and 6 mornings of the week, I read through my mission statement. And the first line is to inspire the world to be more ambitious. So that reminds you every day to do it. And then how do I do that on a practical level? I like to put out a message to the social media world every morning, just a thought that I've had. The podcast, when I get people on and I get some quite inspirational people and successful people on, I don't talk to them about what they're doing. I talk to them about why they want to do it and who they are. And I really find that resonates with people. So, you know, we're sitting at the podcast gets downloaded a number of times per day. There you go. That's one way. And then from there, I'm pushing more and more talks and speeches and doing as much as I can to inspire the world to see that living their most ambitious life will lead them to living their most fulfilled life, which is what we should all try and do.
Mate, that's strong. I like that. That's a great reason to get up every day.
I mean, I've never had a problem with getting up. I've always been someone that gets up quite early, but it does give you that reason to, probably for me more so, not want to go to bed. You know, at night I'm working on something creative. It's 11 o'clock and I get up very early and I don't want to go to bed. You know, I still want to keep doing this. And I've got another friend who's actually in your industry, and he stocks some of your stuff, and he and I have a laugh every time we catch up. We want to try and work out a way to not have to sleep. You know, this angle of, because when you love what you do, you just want to keep doing it. Sleep sometimes gets in the way. It's taken up a third of my life at the moment.
A third of your life. That's an interesting fact, actually, because most people are trying to sleep more. So
don't get me wrong. It has got me into trouble, plenty of trouble. Whether that was when I was training hard and not getting enough sleep, or you know, trying to perform on stage and not getting enough sleep, it does get in the way. I'm working on that. But as far as where my passion lies and wanting to do things every single day, and I'm sure there are people that are listening that understand this. You know, sometimes you'd prefer to have more waking hours.
So, mate, if you're a person who gets up at 5 o'clock to train at 9:00 AM, does a lot of talking to people and changing lives, inspiring lives, then doesn't want to go to bed at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, I'm assuming you are motivated by the word deadline.
I need to stick to deadline. Deadlines. That's correct. I've got a pretty good level of discipline with those kind of things.
That's a good word, discipline. I like that.
Especially from having been overseas selling, it was all on me, and I was quite young at that age. It was all on me to have an income, to have the resources to be able to live. There needed to be a deadline. There needed to be discipline to get it done. Being a lawyer, you need to be efficient, and you need to get it done either A, in time before your partner has a go at you, or before your client has a go at you. You know, you've got to be able to perform within that period of time. And now that evolves to what I do now. You're running your own business. You better stick to some deadlines. You better have discipline for what you want to achieve and get it done in the right amount of time.
So how do you bring discipline, deadlines, and culture into the same sentence? Because obviously when you're talking to someone about your motivation is inspiration, which you said, obviously culture has a lot to do with that. And when you go into a lot of corporates like you do, that culture, left, right side, like it's just, I mean, even just in the small amount of business we deal with, culture changes from door to door. Taking culture into a company that you're not part of is a difficult goal for you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you bring to a group of people to talk about that?
Culture for a company is much the same as a mission for an individual.
Yeah.
So I'll talk on the broad range of that, and that can apply to both. People need to know who they want to be. And a company needs to know who it wants to be. And most companies, and I don't mean to come back to me with we value integrity and discipline and, you know, yeah, with the same lines and the same words that everyone has in their mission statement. Not that they're the wrong words, but you've got to live them. So that's where that discipline comes in. But you need to know who you want to be. And majority of the time, that is only going to be 4 or 5 words. You know, the first time I wrote my mission statement, it was 2 A4 pages, just everything I ever wanted to be. And you whittle it down over time. I think it's about 12 words now. So similar for companies. they shouldn't be looking to go more than 4 or 5 words on truly who you are. And once you get that, culture takes care of itself. Accountability, discipline, these parts rely on the person that's there, the person that's an employee, an employer, or if it's an individual, that they're living who they want to be. So the accountability and the discipline are that next level. And majority of the time, if you're pursuing who you want to be, you are quite disciplined.
That must be a difficult aspect for you when you walk into a large corporate like a bank.
I suppose the difficult aspect is saying no. A lot of the time, you want to help them, you know you can help them, but if they're not willing to listen, then it's a waste of my time. And let's say I've got a couple of larger clients, or a couple of them that are banks, and you would think that a business that's only just turned 3 couldn't really say no to that situation. But my mission is pretty straightforward. Yes, money is good, but if they're not going to listen, or if their executives don't have the culture to adapt to what you're going to push, you know, they simply think it's a box to tick to get you in. Yeah, remember we did that strategic planning episode with Words with Oz. He came in January, we're sweet for the year. It's not how it works.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty quick to say no. I'll probably in most cases do that first one, but it doesn't take more than 15 minutes to realize whether the culture of the place is A, good enough, or is B, able to change.
How do you deal with a group of people that you haven't met before, and you've gone and you're bringing all these concepts in? How do you play with areas like anxiety, fear of failure? Because when people are in a group of people, they always worry about, oh, I don't want to upset that person, or I don't want to be that person, or I don't want to shake the cart. How do you bring that culture in that binds people as one with one vision, one on the bus, off the bus concept?
Time. Yeah. The aspect of not wanting to upset someone is poor culture. Culture is the word you use. I don't normally try and repeat that aspect, but culture is a word that you've used in this question, in this scenario. And if you're in a place where feedback is accepted, used, and realize that feedback is good, feedback is something that's going to help you grow and become better as a company, then speaking up and not wanting to put someone else off is actually just feedback and good for them and healthy. So you've got to create a place where that's accepted. Now, I'm not going to be able to do that in a first off talk. I might present that way and present well and say that exact thing to the team, but it's not going to suddenly click and suddenly the team is happy and freely spoken when they've all spent the last 5 years another way. So it's time. You go in and do that first talk, you give the feedback, you go in and do another one, and you spend 2, 3, 4 months building that new culture that accepts that everyone has something to say and it needs to be said because they're feeling that way and their feedback matters to the performance of the institution.
Yeah, it's an interesting aspect. Like when you mentioned that I've harped on culture, for me personally as an individual, it's something that I really try to suck up when I go in somewhere.
Yep.
And it's my yes or no.
Yep.
And people might look at someone and go, oh, I don't like their hair. No. Or, I don't like their eyes. No. To me, it's culture yes, culture no. And you can pick it up as soon as you walk in the door. Doesn't have to be good culture, but a culture. You know, you walk into something like you walk into 98 Gym. You just feel it. The minute you walk in that door, you know you've walked into something special. And I said that to the boys a couple of weeks ago on their podcast. And, you know, we try and bring that into our brand too. I mean, 20 years old, the world's changing so fast. The fitness industry is something that is dictating where a lot of people live, breathe, hang out, think. And to keep culture as a relevant versus, gee, let's drop an ebook or let's, you know, quickly sell that because it's got this illegal ingredient, it will change a name on it, we'll get that out really quick, we'll make shitloads of money. Yeah, you know, like for Nathan and I, it's no, can an athlete take it? Can an individual get hurt from it? And the people here in this team, you know, the team out the back, and we've got all these, and when I say team, talking about my team down on the floor down there, I hate using the word my, our team downstairs, they kiss the boxes of elite sporting teams and elite athletes before they leave.
Yep.
That's something in the culture we've got out there.
Yep.
And it's run by Athena, who she played a rugby league for New Zealand and played touch football. I think she captained both World Cup type stuff. And she's brought that culture into our brand because mm-hmm. that's what we believe in. You know, we ship a team athlete order before a retail order. Nathan, sorry about saying that out loud, but that's the culture of what we do up here in our brand. It's what we really believe in. We really try and plaster it on the walls and have it everywhere. And when athletes come in, they want to go out the back and meet the guys out the back because they know they get their stuff quickly, they get on time, it's always what they ordered. And that's something for our team here that really means a lot.
Firstly, it's not that I was against the word culture, it was just more that to repeat the same thing over and over again, like it might sound that way, but I love it and I love the culture of this place. I've had Nathan on the podcast before and we've spoken about it, that body science is more of a family. In fact, I would suggest that the word for body science is family, not culture. You know, there's love going into a box to the elite sportsman. Having said that, there's also love going into the box to the retail person.
Absolutely.
Your stand standards dictate that there's a certain level that goes that happens first, or you know, that there's a certain manner and process that happens first, and the standards dictate that every box gets kissed, and the standards dictate that you have a gym on the set of your podcast that probably doesn't get used very often. You know, the standards dictate
it gets smashed every day.
Not to say it didn't get used, I just more mean, but the standards dictate that that's there. The standards dictate that you've got Bogut on the wall, that you've got the Rabbitohs on the wall, that you've got the graffiti.
You're not a Rabbitohs man too, are you?
You almost have to be at the gym.
Wow.
Forget that I'm an AFL supporter, so NRL doesn't mean a great deal to me, but you have to be when you're at the gym. Rabbitohs do come first. And yeah, family seems to be the word that comes across there. So even let's say you're back to your original question of me going in somewhere and building a culture or having to talk to the teams that don't have it yet and start creating it. You go and you ask, you know, who they want to be. If you at Body Science want to be a family, there are plenty of places that they know what that is, and all we need to do is uncover it, and then the culture or the standards or the discipline majority of the time takes care of itself.
So you're saying most people in groups of like-minded, like say bank, I'll use a bank as an example, but probably a bad example to use because you do have bank customers, and I apologize for that, but do they care about that? Do they really care? Do people really care as a whole? Let's talk about the fitness industry. Does it really care what's happening with other people in the fitness industry?
I don't think anyone's out there acting in a manner that wishes to someone else to perform poorly, especially in the fitness industry. Majority of your people, whether or not they're in the bodybuilding world, so actual performance bodybuilders, started out being a PT, started out training people, started out wanting to make someone else better, yep, whilst making themselves better. Different gyms might take on different standards along the way, and that may lead down a path that's at a lower culture than some of the better gyms. But that, you know, that'll come down to leadership, that'll come down to whether or not they know who they want to be. I can't imagine there's any gym out there that knows who they want to be and then follows that and their culture turns out to be a poor one. I think every gym that knows who they want to be and follows who they want to be turns out to have a great culture.
Yeah, nice. I like that. How do we keep the pursuit of excellence when we're in a group environment? We're driven by other people, where other people are setting our family culture, the word, whatever word we want to use on that. How do we continue to get up every day and pursue excellence? I can understand how you might do it personally for yourself. How do you bring the pursuit of excellence into a group? And we can talk about it from a corporate perspective or from the fitness industry perspective. Or
corporate perspective, fitness industry perspective. It all comes down to who that team wants to be, or who that person and who those people of that team wants to be. I'll use the word team, and let's put that across, whether it's corporate or even a sporting team. They're all in pursuit of something. They all want to become something, and they've all got this underlying mission of who they want to be. So the people and the participants of that team need to align with that. Not align with it 100%, but align with it enough that they're going to push the pursuit of that excellence, and that's where the continuation of that comes from. If you are part of a team and you don't align with where they're going and who they want to be, let's say you are part of your mission or part of your who is that you are a honest, integral, I will not lie person, and you worked at a bank over the last 20 years. Probably didn't have much fun at that bank. Put a broad spectrum, but let's take the fact that we've got the reforms and the commission on at the moment. So you want to be a part of a team where your personal mission aligns enough with that team's mission, that so that you want to be there, you want to pursue it, and you want to reach excellence in what you're doing. And from a team's perspective, from a leader's perspective, from someone at the front like yourself, you want to get rid of the people that don't align. There is a job out there for them that will align more with their goals, with their dreams, with their mission. The sooner you get rid of them is a harsh way to put it, but the sooner they go and find what they want to do and you bring in someone to fill their space, to fill that vacuum with someone that matches up to what you want to do, you will attract better performance and be able to find that excellence. So I'm not a quick fix scenario where I go in and put this speech on in front of someone and expect them to all suddenly align with the excellence of that and the pursuit of that team. But I do expect that over that period of time that I'm working with them, people will become much clearer in who they want to be and what they want. And if that doesn't align with where they are, move on and let someone else come in and take that space.
So what should people do who have unrealistic dreams and goals compared to the bus that they're on? Because let's be honest, we have to pay bills, we've got houses, we've got school fees, we've got all the things that happen in life. And it's really nice for us to sit here and go, A, B, C, D, let's do that. How does someone deal with that? I'm asking you from, you're a very easy person to talk to and someone who people could obviously gel with. So what do you do to those people that you meet that you go, they're really not on the same bus as where corporate wants me, management wants me, the team dynamics want me, at whatever level of the tree you want to pick at?
Fortunately, I do gel with people enough that I can have the deeper conversation on a one-on-one level that has them realize or has them step up their game, because they realize that there are enough things, are enough commonalities between their pursuit and the team's pursuit that they'll step their game up where they need to. Or they realize that it's doing them an injustice being there. You know, it's a disservice that they continue on this path. In terms of having an unrealistic goal and then having to fulfill all the day-to-day things along that journey. I mean, it's tough. It's a difficult one. I even spoke about before the fact that I was training before we got started, but the fact that I was training, you know, three times a day in pursuit of a certain goal, and then decided to open my own, you know, Words with Oz, and suddenly realized that business owners / full-time athlete don't match. So you've got to be able to prioritize which one of those matter more. And there's a range of psychological studies that show that, you know, the hierarchy of needs and so on, and so which one's going to win there. But unrealistic goals, I think everyone needs them. I inspire people to be more ambitious. So in that sense, you need to dream huge. Whatever it is you want to achieve with your entire life needs to be, I want it to be beyond current consideration. Whatever you want for body science, I don't want another company to have ever done before. It needs to be that large. But it also needs to be that far in the future. So let's bring it back to, what do we do next? Your next goal needs to be attainable. You would have heard of SMART goals before.
I have, yeah.
When I'm talking to people about unrealistic goals, that's not a SMART goal because it's too far into the future. You don't have the resources, and it's not probably alignable with what you've got at the moment. It's probably specific, probably measurable. But when you're talking about what's the next step, that's when SMART goals should kick in. So if your unrealistic goal is to, I'll just take a, let's say there's a single mum working the teller at a bank, and her unrealistic goal is to become the next Gail Kelly, the CEO of one of the big four. But her first step isn't that. Her first step is to still put food on the table for the child, is to pay all the bills on the week and put a little more aside, as well as get better educated. So let's just focus on that. How many hours of the week does she need to work behind the teller to put food on the table, pay the bills, and then how many hours a week can she put into some extracurricular education, so on and so forth. And then she gets that done for whatever amount of time she sets, and then let's set the SMART goal. The next one, the next one, the next one. And if you put enough faith in that next step, then eventually you'll wake up in 10 years. You know, she's the manager of a state. Wake up 5 years later than that, she's knocking on the door of the C-suite. Wake up 10 years later after that, she's at the top.
And that's a great path. And that's obviously someone who's driven, like you said, and someone who can set SMART goals. How do we as a world deal with failures?
How do we at the moment deal with it? Poorly.
Poorly, okay.
We are conditioned to believe that failure is bad, that you should be ashamed and that you should not try and seek out failure. And it seems to be because of the institutions that have educated us. I think that, like democracy, you know, we are using the best we have at the moment compared to all others. We are using the best education we know of at the moment compared to all others, but that doesn't mean it's perfect. So failure, seeing an F on your report card in school frightens the shit out of you. You know, disappoints your parents, disappoints the school, frightens you. But when you're out here being the real world, you want a failure, you want to fail, and you want to fail as quickly as you can, as many times as you can, to pursue, you know, that next goal. All the people that have achieved the most probably have failed the most, but have also recovered the fastest.
Do you think failure makes us more productive?
It makes us learn to be more productive. I mean, if you are failing consistently time and time again, then you're probably not making too far of any inroads forward. Having said that, you need to keep going. Having said that, you need that ability to bounce back up and keep going. The most successful people only have one commonality, and that is that they didn't stop until they achieved it. They did fail a lot. They probably lost their productivity, but at some point they got the win, and then they kept on building, and that productivity came.
You think as a society now we push accolades and rewards,
as in the fact that everyone gets an award at the moment? Is that what...
Well, you know, every kid runs in a race, they all get a ribbon. Every person who...
I don't believe in it.
You don't?
No. So we're going down the personal, obviously a personal opinion, yeah. And not happy to be argued with on this point. But from my perspective, I think the research has come around full circle now, where they've realized that that's not the way we should go. They've realized that all a ribbon for everyone does is A, takes it away from the winner, you know, makes them feel less, and B, the people that came 7th, 8th and 9th that got the ribbon don't really want it, because they realize they're not silly. They realize they didn't win, they didn't put in the effort, they just got some silly ribbon, and it just takes away the esteem of the entire thing. I had a high performance, so one of the schools that I came through when I was younger has now got a high performance coach in the program there, across all the sports and across some of the year 11 and 12 classes. And they've gone the complete other way with it, where they do encourage people to follow a specific path. So there was a period of time there where you should just try everything, you know, and try and be good across the entire range, you know, try and be as well-rounded as you could. Good in theory, but they've pursued this other path now where you find what you're good at and let's do that full speed. Similarly, if you aren't an A-grade player, you're not in the A's. If there's a year 9 that's better than year 11, they put them up in the A grade. They promote them that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell the parents this at the start of the year, because that seems to be where a lot of the issues are, is that parents have this blindfolded opinion or rose-coloured lens of opinion of their child. You know, how many teachers mark someone an A instead of a B because they just couldn't be bothered dealing with the parents who could come in the next day and say, oh, my child, you know, said we should get a B.
Yeah, well, let alone making it pass or fail too, and taking away that extra satisfaction from someone who's put in that extra work.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, similar to what I'd said earlier about it takes away from the person that won. So I think we're heading there anyway. I think there are people at the front of the game, for lack of a better term, who are already going back to the path of, nope, let's promote the winners, let's encourage those that aren't performing to perform better, but let's promote the winners, let's award the winners, and let's go back to what worked or to what found our best performers. And I think sometimes people's opinions can get lost in translation, especially with media trying to make as many click targets as they can at the moment. But that seems to be where I think it's heading, and that's definitely what's worked best for me and what I've seen work best for companies, sports teams, and individuals.
Where are we going to go as a group of people called the fitness industry in the next 5 years in relation to health and wellness?
We're already pursuing that path of realizing it's a holistic, another one of those terms that is well used, but a holistic approach. People have already realized that a 6-week diet may work and you may shed the kilos, but you haven't done any work on your mind, and the kilos are going to come back because your habits are what they already were. So as far as the fitness industry goes, we're going to see this more of an input from people in that psych world, more of an input where perhaps even on the certification you get as a PT, you've done some work with the mindfulness approach as well. Another aspect of it that I look forward to and hope that we head down that path, and it's definitely something that I've seen more of in the CrossFit realm and, you know, places like 98, which aren't CrossFit, but perhaps more leaned that way, is that it's a community. I'm stealing someone else's thoughts here, but there was once upon a time, maybe around the 80s, you remember the show Cheers, where everyone went to the bar to catch up and get that community feel. We went and pursued the 90s, and everyone remembers the show Friends. They all caught up in a coffee house. Nowadays, people meet in a gym. So health and fitness industry is going to be that place where community matters. And we're not talking about, when I say health and fitness industry, people may think, you know, 12% body fat, people pumping iron for a show, you know, your Arnold Schwarzenegger's back in the day, high performance athletes. But we're not talking about that. We're just talking about healthy, happy people that can move well, eat reasonably well, and they're part of a decent community. And I think that's where we're heading now. Is it's going to be that healthy place to be, that community spirit, and hopefully along those lines as well, we'll create something that's more sustainable, whether that's, you know, thinking about what food we're putting in our mouth, thinking about what supplements we're using, thinking about who we're purchasing from. It's a sustainable approach.
Nice. I know I'm jumping from topic to topic here, but I really want to pick your brains on 1,000 things, let alone delving too deep on anything in particular.
Happy to keep up.
How does someone get out of bed and deal with anxiety? And that's a very open question. I understand what I'm saying here, but it's, I want goals. I want to be driven. I want to have accountability. I want to know where I'm going. I want to be smart about what I'm doing. Holy shit, how do I actually do that? And so now I've got 5 minutes to myself, looking through Instagram and my friends in Europe and these people are doing this. And so anxiety is just something that pours into our lives every day. How do you, as an inspirer and a motivator, anxiety must be a massive thing for you when you walk into places. I mean, just the fact that you've walked in, the group of people are going, holy shit, why have they got this guy in here? And so you're starting off in a platform that people traditionally don't like change. Change is good. I love change, but I'm obviously at the higher end of the change. I don't get a lot of it thrown at me. So I'm a little sitting in the ivory tower there, you could say, in relation to when it does come to change. I love it when the team brings change to us and ideas. And we often have 1%ers here where we talk about changing that 1% that can make a difference. We've had some great outcomes from that. So how do you deal with that anxiety? And I know, like, we do a lot of profiling so that we can deal with each other and you know how to deal with the person you're with, because that's what the profile, and we do a lot of fun playing and scenarios and case studies and that, but you're always a little bit anxious when that person walks in thinking, geez, I hope I don't sit out in the limb by myself and create this aura of negativity or too much positivity or what a wanker or whatever it is that you know, as an individual you can pull forward.
I think the couple of spots that I'll talk about with the anxiety or the, you know, creating an anxious being anxious question. First is, I'm not a clinical psych, so whilst I've done enough reading and understand it all, if you are feeling anxious and you need help, you need to know to reach out to help.
Okay.
And there's plenty of great places there to go. If that's the level at which you are at, then you need to reach out and then you need to find your own well-educated avenues to be able to deal with that. If we're talking about the simple, I'm in a crowd of people and I'm anxious about whether I have to put my hand up and say something soon.
Where I'm going with this is to walk into a gym that you don't know can cause anxiety. For someone to get off a couch and go to a gym, and this isn't not clinical anxiety because that's not what we're here to talk about today, and I appreciate that. I'm more talking about the day-to-day anxiety that stops me moving forward.
Fear of judgment is, if not the only fear, a really large fear that we suffer from as a society these days, especially with your social medias and your all these people who have done so many incredible things and we think we need to keep up. So learning how to deal with that is a big part, and I'll come back to that in just a second. The first thing that I would think, and it relates to my answer from before, is that feedback is good. So you need to be able to accept that people aren't going to agree with what I want to say, and some people are going to love what I'm going to say, but it needs to be said because feedback is good. Similarly, it's okay to suck. It's okay to say the wrong thing. Everyone does it. Everyone always fails. Everyone always makes a fool of themselves. That's okay. The sooner we realize that's the way it is, the sooner we'll reach out those things, get through the anxiety, and be able to add our bit to the performance. So knowing that it's okay is a pretty key concept. A hard one to implement, a hard one to teach, but one that I'll continue to try and get across the line with the teams that I work with and with individuals that I work with, in that, yeah, you felt like you sucked that day. You probably did. That's okay too. Everyone does. Then to move on to the fear of judgment. Who's judging? The first aspect I look at that with is a perspective shift. When you think about what you do, you think about it 100% of the time. And so when you're thinking, what do the two other people in the room think about what I just said? You think that that's all we're thinking about, but we're not. I'm worried about what I said. And the other person in the room is worrying about the camera and the recording and all these other things. They're not paying attention. Similar to the person who's listening to, not that they're not paying attention, but they're not paying 100% of the attention like you are. Yeah. Similar to the person who's listening to this in the car at the moment, they've got a lot going on in their life that you're about 15% of what they think about. So the sooner we can realize that people don't think about us as much as we think they do, you know, that fear of judgment kind of starts dropping down.
When you're talking to a group of people, do you build a lot of ongoing relationships from that? Do you have a lot of secondary feedback from, not from the management who engaged you in that position in the first place, but from that? I mean, obviously you throw words, like you mentioned, you like to put something out every day when we're sleeping.
I try to stay engaged. There are a lot of people, and for the correct definition of the term, I'm actually an introvert. I obviously am on stage. I put myself out there quite a lot in an extrovert fashion, but as far as where does my energy come from, I'm an introvert, where I get a lot of energy from being alone, and that, you know, from spending some time by myself, and then the energy comes and then I can go out and present it to the world. And I say that because there are a lot of people, so if I was to keep in contact with as many as they want to, it takes a lot of energy. I do as best I can, and there are avenues for people to get in touch with me. I love hearing from people that are enjoying the speeches and the podcasts and so on, and I answer all the emails that come through. But if I'm working with a team, a corporate team, the best avenue is through whoever's employed me, as far as, you know, the management goes. If we need some personal one-on-one work to bring them up to the performance level, then I do that. But majority of the time in that scenario, I work through whoever's brought me in.
Being someone who stands on stage or walks into another business and talks about how to invoke change, that's a pretty cool thing to tell people that you do in life. Obviously, success is a driver why everyone gets somebody in or somebody in to set up change. How do you, and I know I keep going back to the how do you, and that's probably getting a little boring, but...
No, please.
How do you value success when you go into something else that's not yours?
Well, my success is when I inspire people to be more ambitious and live a more fulfilling life. And so if I do that correctly, then they'll pursue their success and they'll pursue their ambition and their fulfilling life, and it's a win-win. Whether or not that's at a white goods company trying to get them to sell more, whether or not it's a sports supplement company trying to get them in more elite teams, whether or not it's, you know, with a PT who's trying to find more clients. Pretty diverse spectrum there.
And yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Like, what is the makeup of success is probably the way I should have put that to you. Like you said, yeah, getting people to reach their goals or reach what they want. What actually is that success?
That success is that they become who they want to be.
And that's important in a group dynamic, in a corporate?
Absolutely. You will be fulfilled and reach success. So let's take two separate viewpoints of what success is. Let's say on one side, success is you're attaining your goals, you know, your physical goals, your mental goals, the levels at which you want to reach. But on the other side is living a life that's fulfilling and living a life that's happy, for lack of a better word. And that is something that you need to do every day. And that is something you do by becoming who you want to be. Let's say success to someone who hasn't lived enough thinks being rich is successful. But realistically, being rich is going to bring them something. It might bring them confidence and security, you know, financial security and confidence. So they're the who. The financial security and confidence is the who that person wants to be. They can be confident now. You know, if they concentrate enough and they imagine it enough and they use their mind enough, they can be confident today whether or not they're rich or not. Financial security is probably a little bit further out of the reach, but secure isn't. You know, feeling secure in themselves is something they can do today. So that's that one side of who do you want to be and being successful at being who you want to be. Does that make sense?
It does.
And then the flip side is being rich, the success in attaining something. And if you spend day by day by day repeating the who you want to be, you'll eventually get what that person has. So like I said earlier, as far as what does Words With Oz do, I start with the who. The who is key. It's the largest part of what I do. The next point is what that person wants, and the next point is how do we get there. Who do you want to be? Let's suss that out. And then you do enough repetitive daily actions on the who you want to be, you'll get what that person wants, as long as you keep focused on it and know what it is, and it's there, and it's designed and written and attainable and all those kind of things. You'll get what that person wants, which is that success. And then I'll work on the how, which is a range of small details, or whether it might not even be myself that works on those things. We might say you need a trainer to lose weight. We might say you need a nutritionist to do this. We might say you need a psychologist to do this. I might even say to a company that I can't do the sales training that you're asking about. I can inspire you to want to sell more, but the actual sales training needs to be done by someone else. So there's your two portions of success, what you want, but living a life of who you want to be is the key, is the start.
Speaking about what you want, what is it that empowers you to empower that team that you're walking into?
I truly want people to succeed. And not only do I want them to succeed in what they think they can do, but I want them to succeed on their most ambitious level. So the things they haven't even thought of achieving yet. And that's only going to happen if they're living a life that they love, if they're living a passionate life. And that's only going to happen if the place that they work at is aligned with what they do.
You probably don't get someone like you in if you don't have a problem. As a leader with a vision and where you want to go, you can become very single-minded and single-focused. And I'm not talking about profit and just that type of concept. You know, there's satisfaction. There's a lot more satisfaction in running a business than making a profit. I've got you into body science and I've said, look, I want to build success. I want to see my team happy. I want to see a change in here that has a dynamic that makes it something worth getting out of bed in the morning. What I'm trying to ask you on a personal level here is, how do you bring that game to me with my visions and my goals and my, and I'm using the word my because I'm trying to set the scenario here that you're walking into someone else's shoes right now, mm-hmm. and you're going to lift people up and you're going to make them feel really good about themselves and you're going to give them goals and smart. How do you do that? Like, a lot of people can't even get out of bed and feel good about themselves, let alone bringing it to a group of 50 people or 30 people.
Similar to the answer that I said before, when you are giving, it really does give to you. It's not an unselfish act. When I come into a group scenario and lift them up, I leave that scenario very energized, very fulfilled, and it's fulfilling my goals. You know, it's fulfilling my mission to inspire people to be more ambitious, to lead by example, to be respected because I take the actions necessary to get there. So in pursuit of those things, I do my research beforehand. I know what body science is about. I know what you want to achieve. I try and find out what's not working for you at the moment. I'd probably do a little bit of research on the people that work for you and find out a little bit more about them and how to get them to buy in, what the alignment's going to be for the company and so on. But it's in my performance that I get to feel fulfilled. So that's what drives me to go in and speak to the teams.
So how do you take you get a mission statement, come across your desk, you go, that is the worst piece of crap that I've ever read, but I'm on tomorrow at 9 o'clock. How do I do that?
I would start again, going in the most polite way possible, get people to tell me about the company's values and mission and see if we can alter it. It's probably not so poor. It's just that we could probably make it clearer. I've never really seen a mission statement where you think, well, that's just terrible, but they can definitely get clearer. And a lot of people haven't done this. It's not like this isn't like maths or science. It's not taught in school. You've got to be one of those weirdos that enjoys reading self-development books to have experienced any of this kind of stuff before. It is becoming a little more mainstream, sorry, even the wrong word. It is becoming a little more frequent, but it's nowhere near mainstream. So people aren't adequate at it yet. Majority of us, you know, you and I spoke earlier about the 1%. It's almost what it is. It's almost the 2% thing that the people spend this time, you know, reading Stephen Covey's, reading self-development, knowing what a mission statement even is. So they're going to come across poor, and people are going to be superficial. I just have to spend some time digging deeper and having them buy in and create their own at a more meaningful level.
Do you think it's something that people need to hang their hat on and believe in?
The company's mission statement? Yes. It's a really simple answer. Yes. If you don't, move on.
Have you got any good reading or anything on your website that people could read more about that on?
I do have a list of books that are available through the notes section of my podcast and through the different conversations. But
we should drop your website on here just while I've brought it up, wordswithods.com. And why would I go to that website?
Two reasons. One, it's the best port to get in contact with me, as well as the things that I have put out there. So there's the podcast there, and you can find out where my talking is. Similarly, I've got two programs on there. One is an executive coaching program that you can get in contact. We can go through whether or not you need how I can help.
So you do a lot of one-on-one stuff with people?
I do a lot of one-on-one stuff for those that is needed. So yes, I do a lot of it, but I also, we work out that it's probably not necessary for some people as well. Secondly, if you think there's a team culture issue at your workplace, or you want to even increase performance, or you're not sure what your who is, you know, what your mission is, then through Words With Oz, you can get contact.
I love that, not sure what your who is. We've spent a lot of time on the who here at Body Science.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting that the mission actually came from a 98 Riley session. I probably shouldn't say this because Nathan will kill me. We spent a lot of time, it was that classic, oh, wear a lifestyle, blah, 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 boring, yawn halfway through it. Go look at every other brand. They got exactly the same thing going. We spent a lot of time going out, and the word trusted kept coming back. And once again, boring, trusted. Nathan went to a 98 Riley session, and somebody, it probably was you because you said something similar before. And at the end of the session, they just finished a training, and someone said, what do we want to be? We want to be fit, happy, and healthy. Nathan came straight back and said, I've done it. That's what it is. Let's move on. And everyone, no one argued. Everyone just said, yep, we love it. And so, you know, fit, happy, and healthy. Is our mantra at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's so good because every decision we make doesn't meet fit, happy, and healthy. And
just to highlight what you've run through there, a lot of the time the answer is so simple.
Mm.
And I push this a lot, that life should be simple. But a lot of the time you're seeking out this answer of who you want to be, especially in a corporation scenario. We want to be above board. We want to be integral, is a word that comes up a lot. We want to be high performance. We want to be this and that. Majority of the time it's the simple things that come and stand out. And then when you've got it simple, you can answer your question. Like you had just said, every time you come to a fork in the road, whether it's your personal mission statement or your company's mission statement, you come to a decision to be made, ask yourself whether it meets your 3, 4, 5 word criteria. If it does, the decision's already made. And that's the whole purpose of it. Too many people pursuing these things, they're not sure they want. If they knew their 5 words, you know, their 5 core values, and answered the question based on those 5 core values, by the end of their life, it's pretty fulfilling. And the best part is you can change them at some stage. But at least you know them for that point and for what you want to do right now.
Let's talk about your Instagram account, @wordswithoz. So I had a look at it a little earlier.
Sure.
Quite inspired by it. What drives you to create an Instagram account for people? I mean, we've all got one. Why is yours good?
I enjoy mine because it's got a pretty simple message. Everything on there is some form of inspiration. It's quite heavily focused on the podcast. So each week I put up 3 posts based on the podcast. One of them is a video, normally a series of stills with someone speaking over the top, and that would have been my guest, and it's something that inspired me from the podcast that they said. The next one is a quote of theirs, and then the third one is just a picture of their podcast telling the people what it's all about.
Where can we hear your podcast?
It's available everywhere. So the best point of call for most people, because we're iPhone addicts, is on the iTunes app. You can get it at wordswithoz.com/podcast. It's available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Google, Words With Oz, and you'll be able to find it. As far as the Instagram, the second point of that is I do a story every morning like we spoke of before, but it's called While They Were Sleeping. I get up, I get up quite early. So normally this story is being posted, and I'm getting a little bit of traction on it because people enjoy the fact that, you know, while they're getting up, that first trip to the loo, or while they're making breakfast, they get to watch the story. But it's just a minute's worth of thoughts of something that's come across my thought pattern, a group that I've worked with, individual I've worked with over that last week. And I'm a broad-based concept kind of guy, so it's never specific, but just something you can implement on the daily to be a little bit more inspired, a little bit more ambitious, or get yourself a little bit of better results.
Have you got a closing motto, statement, or something you believe in that you want to finish up with?
I normally close out my podcast encouraging people to take the leap when the question arises. You know, if I should or shouldn't take the leap. But considering what we've spoken about, I'll give you 2. The first one is that all of this that we've discussed means absolutely nothing if you don't take the action. If you're listening to this podcast thinking, I need to get someone in, whether or not it's me or whether or not it's someone else, I need to get someone in for my team. If you don't do it within the next 24 hours, make a call, do the research, book it in, it's not going to happen. So the action matters. The action matters most. Yeah. And then the second point is the success level of your life is made up of what you do on the daily. So whatever your daily habits are, you show me the standard of them, I'll show you the success level of your life. If you want to be more successful, raise your standards.
Raise your standards. Mate, I can't thank you enough for coming on. My business partner, Nathan, is a massive fan of yours. He is available on your episode. You actually did a little podcast with Nathan on.
I did. I spent an hour sitting down with Nathan. He's got a great story. I don't know what number episode it is, but if you look it up, Nathan,
we'll drop that below the. We'll put a link on the below. Thanks for coming on, mate. I do want to get you back on and do a lot more talking, get a little bit more deep. It was quite a difficult one here for me personally today because it's so broad on what you do, and I actually haven't met you before, so it was even harder. But I would love to get you back. Probably even bring some other people in to talk about changing the world.
Yeah, because I'd love to. That's what we're about.
I love your mojo.
Perfect. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Excellent.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.